We have got to jump into our next segment here on New Music Monday, which is our interview segment. And I'm so excited because today we are joined by legendary Grammy winner himself, Martin Atkins. Martin, how are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Now I want some One Direction perfume.
Ooh.
Yeah. I wish I still had it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you wanted to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do. A lot, I know.
Okay, I've been in a bunch of bands. I've written a bunch of books. I teach. I develop curriculum. I started the Museum of Post-Punk and Industrial Music 4 years ago in Chicago.
Awesome.
Does that do it?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah. So tomorrow night at 5, you'll be speaking at the University Galleries about Chicago's place in the post-punk and industrial music scene. Could you tell us more about this event tomorrow night?
Yeah, well, so one thing that's happened at the museum is I kind of accidentally, because industrial kind of grew out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Chicago. My label was based in Chicago. All of these things keep coming to me that seem to define the Chicago scene. So I became familiar with different small, tiny punk clubs, which lasted for a year before they mysteriously burnt to the ground, which then somebody else started a club, or a recording studio, or a band, or a graphic arts company, or a video company, or a clothing store. All of these different things came together to enable the scene to kind of explode and grow. And it's just really interesting to me. I just pick up these pieces of knowledge as people would bring things into the museum to give to me, like a table from Club Neo or the sign from Exit, which nobody knows I have till I mentioned it on the radio. It's how museums acquire things. People steal things for you. So I got interested in, well, what is this? I was part of the punk. I came up through punk in 76, 77 in the UK. I was in a band with Johnny Rotten for 5 years. So, well, I saw what was happening with punk. And then I'm in New York and hip hop was coming down from the Bronx down to Manhattan. And people are finding their feet. And Basquiat is doing flyers for TO3 Nightclub, painting my friend's kitchen door. You know, all this stuff is. So what are the ingredients of this stuff outside of talented people doing amazing stuff? So I started to look into that. And it became a thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's a 9-hour presentation.
I am so excited for tomorrow night, and I saw it is going to be called A Blueprint for Chaos. Where did you come up with this name?
Well, I had another title, which is rubbish. Like, the ingredients that made, like, oh, God. Which it was that at first. Yeah. And I wanted something like, but then there's another version of Blueprint for Chaos, which sounds like a heavy metal song, Appetite for Destruction, you know. So I just like that. So So is there a blueprint? How could we follow it? So it's the essence of education and museums, I guess. Let's have a look at what happened so we could do it again. So we could do more of what works and less of what doesn't, you know. So I started to think, you know, if you tolerate diversity, right, that's a good thing. What happens if you celebrate it, right? So if you've got a little bit of a flickering matchstick or a candle, what happens if you pour gasoline on that, right? So this it's really interesting to me because then we can do it again, you know?
Yeah, it's a perfect name.
Well, and I think this sounds, I don't know how this sounds, but I've been around chaos and destruction, and Game of Thrones quote, chaos is a ladder. Everybody knows that quote.
Oh, yeah.
Chaos is a ladder. Like, okay, that's wild and interesting. So when I moved to Chicago, I didn't know what I was going to do. I ended up playing drums with Ministry and doing a bunch of things. But I knew, even though I didn't know what I was going to do, I was going to parachute into the middle of whatever was going on. I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to be in the middle of it. So that recognition of opportunity, I think, is interesting to look at. So you might look at, I remember looking at Detroit 15, 20 years ago. I was actually standing in downtown Detroit and this building fell down. I mean, it was a mess. But you start to look at places like that and go, ooh, there's potential. Like sometimes there's too much potential, but there's potential. Whereas downtown Manhattan now, there's nothing but art galleries and it's too expensive to even, I don't even know why we play Manhattan anymore because all of our friends and fans live an hour and a half away. They can't afford to be there. So, and the same is kind of true with Austin. What do they say? Keep Austin weird? No. All the artists and musicians have been priced out of Austin. So you have to be careful. Think about what it feels to live in Austin now. Like you go and used to go to a bar and see a band. Well, the band can't commute in to do a poorly paying show. So you're kind of destroying all the reasons that people were attracted there in the first place. It's just it's interesting to me.
Yeah, for sure. So could you tell us like how your career in the music industry began and how it progressed over time?
Well, okay. Well, yeah, my dad bought me a drum kit. That's when I was 9.
Wow.
And he was an absent father working hard to keep a roof over the family's head and expand his own horizons. But if my dad had bought me a lawnmower, this would be an interview about landscape gardening. Where did I get the ideas for my chain of garden stores? So I played my drums for 4 hours a day until my hands bled. And then I joined my first band when I was 11 and started gigging when I was 12. Ended up doing 8 shows a week, cover bands and original bands. And then went to London for some auditions and ended up joining Johnny Rotten's band after the Sex Pistols, which was called Public Image Limited. And I was in that band for 5 years until I couldn't take it anymore. Came to the States for the first time in 1980. We did American Bandstand. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know who Dick Clark was, as I'm sure you don't know who. Yeah, it's exactly. Huge TV show. Went out to 18 million people on a Saturday afternoon. And then I jumped into another band called Killing Joke. I started to manage Killing Joke because it was a catastrophe. And if I hadn't started to manage the band, it wouldn't have existed for me to play drums in it. So it wasn't like, I want to be a manager. Like, if I don't manage this, it's going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. So I did that. While I was in Killing Joke, I was asked to tour with Ministry. When I was on tour with Ministry, I started my own band called Pigface with the other drummer, Bill Rieflin. He was in King Crimson REM Ministry. And there's 700 plus people in my band, Pigface. Flea, Danny Carey from Tool, Randy Blythe from Lamb of God, Enesh from KMFDM. did I say Danny Carey from Tool? Yeah, lots of, like, last tour we had 5 drummers, 3 bass players.
Wow.
Andrew Weiss from Rollins Band and Ween, Greta Brinkman from Moby. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It's a nightmare. So I have my own label. I make scenery. I have a print shop. I teach. I write books. And all of that kind of came together with this insane museum that I started.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about the museum already. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about this? I definitely want to check out more about the museum.
Mm-hmm. What? You want to know more about the museum?
Oh, yeah. A little bit.
I think we've been around for 4 years. And I think I have to go back and individually thank everybody who came during the first year because I see photographs and there's nothing in there. And people flew out from Los Angeles and they're like, oh, keep up the good work. And I think what they really meant was, what are you doing? Get it together. Now it's overwhelming. People send me stuff every week, 3-4 times a week. Packages keep arriving. I keep discovering my own stuff. There's boxes of stuff everywhere. audio tapes, videotapes, photographs, scenery, all kinds of stuff. And we were just sent a signed first edition of William Burroughs' Naked Lunch. People just keep sending me crazy things. Now it's overwhelming. People love it.
Yeah. Do you have anything in your museum that's your favorite piece you own?
Yeah. For a couple of reasons. I have what we think are the earliest Nine Inch Nails demos. We think, and we're researching this and looking at stuff, we think they're from November 85, which is really early for Nine Inch Nails. But Trent, I had this crazy punk band called Brian Brain, and we needed a horn section in Cleveland. I asked all my friends, do you know of a horn section? My friend Tom, we used to sleep on his floor, played trumpet. And he said, well, my friend plays saxophone. That was Trent. And I don't remember anything about that gig, but the next day was a birthday party for the woman who booked the club. And in the laundry room at the house where the party was, Trent gave me this cassette. And so it's early. It's synth poppy Nine Inch Nails. It's super cool. But what I love, love, love about it is I sold that cassette in 2010 for $1,400. I'm in the music business. I've got four kids and two buildings in Chicago. My life is up and down. In a year ago, last December, I got an email. And this guy's like, are you interested in this cassette tape? And I punch myself in the face. I'm like, you idiot. You fool. This is $15,000 in a heartbeat. So I tried to pretend I wasn't interested. I'm thinking it will lower the price. I'm like, I don't know if I am interested, really. I mean, eh. And the guy kind of shut me down. He's like, listen, I bought this tape from you in 2010 for $1,400. It feels to me like it belongs at the museum. What's your address? And he just sent me the tape.
Wow.
So, but like, I have all kinds of favorite things. There are band members, people I played with who are no longer with us. Sometimes that stuff reverberates quite heavily. Sometimes it's more joyful. But I like that. Here's what I really like. The museum has taught me that I don't know S about F, if I could say that. And like everybody has a different journey. And I could be like, have a look. This is my drum kit from the head like a hole. I played Wish on this kit. And here's this other huge thing. And they're over in the corner looking at a torn up piece of paper because that's from a gig that they were at. Like that was their first show when they were 14. Like everybody was on acid. It was crazy. Like everybody's different and everybody has a different thing that sets their head on fire. So I love that I learned that at 65 years old.
Yeah, I definitely am very intrigued about this museum. Where can the people at home kind of find out more about this to check it out?
I'm on Instagram. My handle, I'm Flowers Fight for Sunshine.
Awesome.
On Insta. And if you find me there, you can go to my bio, look through my link tree, and all my stuff is up there. There's always interesting people coming through the museum who are more relaxed in that environment. So we had the guys from Pig talking. They're both sober. Two of the guys are sober. That was really interesting. All kinds of interesting conversations and events.
Awesome.
And you mentioned the song Wish, which you made with Nine Inch Nails, and this song received a Grammy. How did you feel? Like, what went through your head when you won that Grammy?
Well, it's basically, I laid the drums down first. And it's basically a beat that I listened to growing up from a band called The Sweet, called Ballroom mm-hmm. Blitz. It's Ballroom Blitz. So, you know, there you go.
That's awesome. I love that song. That was one of my favorite songs growing up. So that's so cool to know.
Well, it's also, I can say this, there's a school of music here, right? I don't read music. You know, I have my master's degree in other things, but I enjoy the fact that my colleagues at Millikan can read music upside down, back to front, but I have a Grammy.
That's awesome.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, and again, I'm so excited for your events tomorrow night at 5. Is there anything else that you want to shout out for the event tomorrow or anything else with that?
No, I don't know. Come out.
I can't wait.
Come say hi.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Oh, I do want to say one thing. If you come visit the museum, you could work things out with Rose or Eric. It's normally a $45 ticket. I've got some passes tomorrow that I will hand out to people so you can... If you come up to Chicago, you get to come and see the museum for free.
I would love to do that. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for coming on today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.